Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest tech news, and our topics today include the unboxing of John T's iPad Pro, some tips on geek gifting this Christmas, and with MS Office's 365's outage the other day, what do we do when our cloud blows away? We'll talk about that, and maybe creating our own cloud maybe be worth the effort. I don't know. Net neutrality is back in court today. That's likely where it's going to stay. We'll discuss the finer points of that. Plus your calls, texts, and emails, and Facebook posts. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions via email midday@sdpb.org or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, or call now 800-524-3604. We'll be right back after this news. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys for this first episode of December. Welcome, everyone. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer questions that you may have. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls today, Mac guru Joel Brovelite is here. Joel, you're toting a giant iPad.
I know, it's so big.
And we're gonna have to talk about that in just a second. Amos Aesop is here as well to bring us his knowledge in the world. Amos, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Wonderful.
Good.
Wonderful.
Good.
And from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, South Dakota, Jeff Litterick joins us on the line. Jeffrey, how are things in Pierre today?
Very nice day out, especially for those hunters that are in the area. There seems to be quite a few of them in town this weekend. So,
great. Well, we wish them all a great weekend. You can call, text, or tweet, or email your questions even, or simply swing by the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. That's a lot of ways to get a hold of us.
You just pick one.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Pick one.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's pick one, facebook.com/techradio. If Amos can configure his phone properly, he's going to post a photo there of your ginormous iPad Pro. And you can go out there and see, and then leave a comment for us or a question.
Don't let my hands throw you. They're big, and it still looks big.
They are big hands, and it is a big iPad.
It's ridiculous.
Yes.
The other way, the other couple
of iPads
ways,
do you have?
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Currently?
At any one given time.
Well, that changes depending on when a new one comes out.
Sure.
I think currently my household might have 5.
Wow.
You've got a household of 3?
3.
Yeah. 2.5. Sort of.
2.5. Well, not really. Not really. You know, I was talking about this with a friend of mine and how we were talking about television and whatever. And my daughter uses an iPad just voraciously. And the way she like consumes video, like when we were kids, we would like, oh, can I turn cartoons on? I want to watch Scooby-Doo or whatever it is. You want to watch that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my daughter is like, well, it's TV, but can I watch YouTube? My daughter will watch YouTube over regular television any day of the week. She has certain channels that she likes to watch, and it is exactly the same way I used to watch TV. You know, she has certain channels that she watches, certain video types, and you know, other than a few shows on TV, you know, TV is just not interesting for her. So she uses an iPad more than I do.
I'm a little scared to ask this. Does the PBS Kids apps, is she into those at all?
Of course, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Great. So then she
would prefer to watch that than on the TV because she doesn't understand, you know, she's 8. She doesn't understand that, you know, whatever episode, you know, the one with the squid, the colossal squid and the sperm whale, that you can't just watch that by, you know, pointing at the TV and say, put this one on, but you can do that on your iPad. So that's much, much preferred. So, I mean, it is a different world for those kids, people that grow up with that technology, and it's going to be different.
They call it a second screen, and it really, you know, it could go into a third screen, because if she's watching something on that, she may want to
She knows how to do it. If she wants to watch it and we don't require her to wear headphones because we don't, you know, we're watching something else or you know, it's too loud. But she knows how to throw it right up under the TV or either of the TVs that we have in our house. So, you know, she can just do that if she wants. She's completely aware of how to use that technology.
Is there parental controls?
Yeah.
So you can sort of, you know.
Both in YouTube and on the iPad itself. You know, they're not perfect, which is kind of a problem. But, you know, I mean, it's just like when we were kids, you know. There's a certain amount of trust in my mom and dad maybe leaving the room and letting me watch TV. There's a certain amount of trust in, you know, my daughter using the iPad. You know, one difference is our TV never kept track of what we watched, but the iPad does. So, you know, and I've shown her, like, oh, this is what history is, you know, and I can also check the IPs of any web address that's, you know, hit through our router. So, and she knows that. So, you know, I mean, it's different, but it's really, as far as I'm concerned, exactly the same.
Well, speaking of kids, I don't want to deviate too far off the iPad trail here real quick, but have you seen the thing that's supposed to be the big device for kids in 2016? It's that Yokai watch that's kind of, it's been big in Japan for a number of years. And they're sort of reforming. All the big hitters are getting in on this, the Nintendos and all those, but in collaboration with the company. But they're kind of redesigning the whole interface and the whole deal for the for Western kids, because they don't expect them to interact with the watch like the Japanese kids do over the years.
Yeah, that's a product by Nintendo.
Is this a modern take on like the Tamagotchi?
I think so.
Yeah, it's kind of the Pokemon. Yes. Hmm. And it's supposed to be the big hot thing to watch in 16 for kids is watch. Yeah, watch.
I guess see what I did there.
Right. But we'll have to keep an eye on that. But anyway, we were diverting ourselves from the iPad talk here. But what can you tell us about the device that's in front of you right now? I guess initial impressions of.
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, maybe want to get an iPad because of the bigger screen. That was really not a big concern to me. I've got the iPad Pro in front of me right now. Because I do graphic design and I do a lot of art, that my main reason to get it was to use it with the pencil, which I'm also holding in my right hand for the radio people, because I use a drawing tablet every day for my work, and this is by far the best drawing tablet I've ever owned. I wouldn't say it's necessarily the best drawing tablet I've ever used, but some of those are in excess of $2,000. So one difference for me that's a huge difference is I can draw right on the artwork that I've done. Which is a big deal, because previously, you know, I had to draw on a tablet and it would appear on the screen, and there's this 3-foot separation between the art. And being able to just have one interface that I can do, I'm pulling up a drawing that I did of my favorite superhero, mm-hmm. Daredevil.
And you're popping through the layers.
I can pop the layer down, and I can, you know, there's several great programs that allow you to draw, some by Adobe, all of which are super cheap compared to their desktop compatible or desktop component. So that's the main reason I like it, is because it replaces my my drawing tablet. Since I've been learning how to do it, I basically haven't used a drawing tablet on my desktop here.
Well, that's very interesting, and that's touch sensitive. I see the darker.
You can see there. I can shade this. You guys ought to check it out, because it's. And of course, you can. I'm scribbling here for those that. This is a really good show on the radio, I'm sure. so yeah, it's touch sensitive and it's very sensitive. One thing I can't get past is, because it's glass and because the pen is very smooth, it has no or has very little. Give to it, like I was trained on paper,
right?
So paper, when you draw on it, you know, there's a certain texture and a pull back as you're drawing.
Sure.
This is much more like painting, where there's just not a lot of friction. That's the word I'm looking for. So that's different for me, but I'm getting used to it very quickly. So that was the reason I got it, is to replace my drawing tablet. Okay. Honestly, as an iPad, it's entirely too big for me. which is the reason I still have 5 and not 4 iPads, because if I'm browsing the internet or something, which it looks great on this size of screen, you know, but you think of the places you're doing that, it's just
That's almost tabloid size.
Bigger than my screen? Yes, I have the Mac. It's actually just about the same size.
Yeah, it's about the same size.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know.
So that was the reason I got it. I think there are a lot of people that are going to use it. You know, musicians is another reason I would use it. A larger screen allows you to display. This screen is just about the exact same size as an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, which is what size music or really anything comes on the iPad Air 2. And all the iPads before, you know, you could get a full sheet of music on there, but it was shrunk down a bit. And those of us that are used to playing off of regular size paper, you know, it's a bit of a strain. So I see this is going to be used a lot in that environment. And then, of course, anybody that uses it in the creative area is definitely going to like it the same way I would. And then, you know, anybody that just uses it as their main computer. One thing I don't have, and I'm sure John does, is interested in doing. I don't have the keyboard that you could get, and there's other keyboards that you could get with it, just because I'm not going to use it that way. But, you know, maybe I would sometime. But it's very fast. In fact, if you look at the benchmarks for this compared to about 80% of laptops out there, the iPad Pro is faster, including many of Apple's current offerings.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a very, and part of the reason is because their mobile devices use their own chip, the A9 chip, which is the, I think is what the version of chip that's in the iPad Pro, A9 something. Because they make, you know, they have their own chip and they can integrate all their own software, you can, of course, tweak that to get a lot more speed than if you have to get a chip from Intel and put it on a motherboard from this place and software from Microsoft, and all of a sudden, you know, optimization goes out the window.
I got a bunch of questions for you.
Yeah.
Number one, let's start at the last one first here. You're talking about a bigger screen is less strain for your eyes to look at. And I was just reminded this week going and seeing my optometrist that, you know, my eyes aren't getting any better. Would this be, if somebody's maybe struggling a little bit with a regular size iPad and they're constantly, you know, using their fingers to blow up text to see it and other things, would this, is this too unwieldy for an older person? Like I'm getting to be an advanced age. Is that too big for me to read the paper? You know,
Definitely not. I mean, you know, here's the deal. We're all used to, you know, it's so big compared, but you know, I mean, it still weighs whatever, less than a pound, you know, I mean, it doesn't weigh anything. It's super, light.
That's lighter than I expected.
And it's no bigger than a magazine. You know, it's stiffer, obviously, because it's glass and aluminum. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's in fact, it's thinner than most magazines. So you know, I say it's too big for me. And you know, here's my first world problems. Oh, this iPad that I have that I own is entirely too big for me. I think it's bigger than the way I got used to using an iPad to browse the internet. I don't think it's too big for an actual human.
You know where it's going to be a problem is people at concerts taking pictures holding that up in the air.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I think that's going to self-select a bit, cuz I mean, how are you going to carry this in safely without it's the size of a laptop basically, for thinner.
I pity the person that holds that up in front of me.
I bet you get a picture of a Justin Bieber concert and you've got moms holding it up recording video.
You're absolutely right. Shame on those people, but I don't know. New iPads aside, nothing's going to help those people.
Right.
My next question is, I guess as an artist, Joel, how do you feel about it? There's probably parents and grandparents out there that are trying to think of some Christmas gifts for kids as a art device or as a pad, as a drawing pad. Is learning electronically, is there any advantage or disadvantage of that versus them going out and getting a nice set of pencils and a sketch pad?
It's cheaper. You know, I mean, it's in the long run, you know, you've got to replace pencils and paper and that type of thing. And then, of course, if you're a serious art student, you've got to buy, you know, colored pencils or, you know, markers that are in excess of $5 a pop. And you can't just use regular paper. You have to use, you know, good quality paper. Of course, nothing's cheaper than a notepad and a pencil, which is, you know, what you do as a hobby. But if you're serious about it, it's actually pretty inexpensive if you compare it to even the other digital tools on the market. $100 for the pencil, $700 for the iPad. Maybe it's $799, so $900 total.
That doesn't have a docking station for the pen, does it?
It does. Well, pencil. You can charge it. It docks
right,
that way.
Right.
But no, it doesn't, and that's kind of weird. But you know, I don't think they wanted to have a hang-on deal.
They'll make an aftermarket hang-on.
Somebody's already made one. But it's cheaper than drawing tablets that are on the market. And then, of course, you have a drawing tablet. You have to have a computer. So you're talking computer, drawing tablet, and software. And the software, like I said, the main drawing program that I've been using with this, which is slightly different than I use Photoshop on my desktop, I use a different program called Procreate here. $10. It's $10. It does everything that I need it to do for Photoshop, you know, for a drawing program for Photoshop. It doesn't do everything Photoshop does, but it does everything I need to do for that portion of the work that I do on a computer.
Well, that's at least one less zero than I thought it was going to be. So,
as far as price. The price, yeah. No, I mean, and there are programs that maybe are in the $15 to $25 range. I haven't seen anything much bigger than that. There's also a CAD program that I'm hoping might replace some of my Illustrator work, because I do most of my work in Illustrator, to be honest. And it's just the tools are different, and I've been using Illustrator since, you know, before it was the year 2000. So I've been using Illustrator a very long time. So I'm entrenched in that, but I'm also flexible enough to relearn. So I'm hoping to look at that. But you know, your original question, is it worth it for an art student to get this? Absolutely, I think so.
Okay. How old are kids? If a kid makes a drawing, traditional pencil drawing today, he wants to share that with his friends, and look at this, you know, great thing I did. How do you get it from? Do they have to scan it? Do they take a picture with their phone?
Like a standard pencil drawing?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're actually going to use that in digital art, which is something I do, you know, mm-hmm. Before I got this drawing tablet that I really liked, I would do a lot of mock-ups and sketches on actual paper with actual pencil, and I would scan it in, and then I would take it into Photoshop, and I'd work from it from there. I honestly, you know, I'd never really learned to draw in layers, layers meaning you draw one thing, and then you create a layer on the computer,
yep.
And then you can draw over that, and you can create another layer, and you can shift the layers up and down, and you can look in this photo, this drawing of this superhero that I did here. I've got multiple layers here, and I drew it in layers. So as I was going, you know, if I make a mistake or something, I don't have to ruin the entire project. I can lay a background color in the background, and that actually lays over the top. I can change the layer so it goes on top. And I wish that when I learned to draw that this was available to me, because I think it would have made my drawing better. It certainly would have made it faster. So I'm really psyched on how this works for art and certainly in all of the arts. Again, I mentioned music. I think that this is a slam dunk for musicians. I think this is the edge that we are going over for musicians not playing on paper and playing off of a digital device. I've been doing that when I played play music. I've been doing that for years. And this device is so much better and roomier. One thing I should mention for those that are talking, you cannot just buy the Apple Pencil and use it on any iOS device. It is specifically for the iPad Pro. Now, I assume that will change with some of the iOS devices that come out from now on, but the reason it works only with the iPad Pro is because the iPad Pro has, you know, four sensors for every one sensor for touch that all of the other iOS devices go. So it's four times as sensitive, which gives it the ability to, when you start drawing, if you've ever used any other drawing tablet, when you start drawing, it just happens immediately. And of course I have that turned off, but it just happens immediately. Whereas other devices, you know, if you use styluses and whatever, there's this delay that I never could get past before this. So the Apple Pencil is only for the iPad Pro. And I want to iterate, it is not a stylus. It is specifically for what I am doing with it. It's specifically for drawing. It is a drawing tablet that has a computer built in. So people talk about how Apple finally came up with a stylus, and it's such a, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek. They say it's ridiculous. It's not a stylus at all. You could use it to browse the internet, but that would be dumb. You could just use a stylus. Many companies make them, but this is a drawing tablet replacement.
Or your finger. You can just use that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get the discussion going a little bit on net neutrality. We've got some gifting ideas, and there's some security things to talk about. A big hack of some kids' information from a technology company that we all have probably heard of, VTech. It's been around a number of years, and we want to talk a little bit about that and maybe what the impact of that is after this quick break. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio on this fine December day. Reminder, we are back here in the same studio December 18th. So set your calendars now. But today, of course, December 4th, and we would like you to call, text, or tweet your questions to us. We have one waiting for us on Facebook, Amos?
Yeah, from Facebook, John from Sioux Falls writes that since the merger with DirecTV, AT&T has been sending him lots of attractive offers to switch to their wireless service. And he's looking for opinions on those attractive offers versus something like a Verizon or a Sprint or any other coverage or any other company that might be providing service in this area, and specifically asks about coverage. In my opinion, in the state of South Dakota, if you're not on Verizon, then you need to be careful about where you're going and know that there are going to be outage areas frequently. That being said, if you're staying on the I-29, I-90 corridor, just about any of the major carriers are going to be just fine, because either they're going to have service or they're going to be, you'll be able to roam through other people's services. But you get outside and, into the small towns and you're going to lose sometimes service completely. I don't know what anybody else's experience is.
Well, I used to be a Sprint subscriber for a long time, and I was always satisfied with their service, except for, as you say, going kind of rural. So that I have experience there. I don't have any experience with AT&T other than I kind of illegally use their services when I didn't illegally use their service. I paid my bill. But I had a Sioux City number when the iPhone first came out. It was unavailable in South Dakota. So I was able to use that, and the
it was
coverage
a workaround is what we call that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it wasn't illegal; they couldn't prosecute me. It's just against the rules. Yeah. And the coverage was not good then. I have heard since that the AT&T coverage is very good in Sioux Falls, and again on the interstates. I would be interested to know, and please just shoot us a text or hit us up on Facebook. Let us know your outcome if you switch to AT&T, because I can't say that I haven't been interested as well with the merger. I've seen those same attractive offers, although I don't use any satellite for TV anymore, but that's a whole other discussion.
I've heard anecdotal things from friends of mine that have switched and switched back, full disclosure here, I carry both an AT&T phone and a Verizon phone with me pretty much all the time. And if it's, with a few exceptions in South Dakota, if my AT&T phone is showing no dots or no bars, I'm not on Verizon either. But there are instances where I've got coverage on one and not the other. And you're going to find those. The thing is you just want to make sure that isn't where you live or where you hang out the most. If you're sending a child to college, make sure the phone you're sending with, has that coverage there. You're right. I mean, the corridors thing is still fairly accurate in South Dakota, but like you say, I would rather have the information start flowing from people that are dealing with this day to day. Go on and reply. What was that, John, again?
Yes. Yeah.
So go to facebook.com/techradio, and we'd like to see some opinions from you, the listener, on John's question there, and hopefully we'll see some before the end of the show. We'll stop back with that. Interesting story, NPR this morning, keeping us up to date on the whole net neutrality thing. And we haven't talked about that much on the show lately because, well, there hasn't been a whole lot of news.
It's in the hands, yeah, it's right now it's in the hands of the judges out in the D.C. court circuit. So, you know, as we speak, they might be handing down the verdict on that right now.
And
so.
The key question is, did the FCC have the authority to reclassify broadband as being more heavily regulated, as a more heavily regulated telecommunication service? That's the kind of the crux of it.
Yeah, but, yeah, do they have the authority to classify broadband more specifically as a common carrier in the same way that railroad and telephone was? So that, you know, basically they're saying that internet is so integral to everybody's life that it absolutely has to be available equally to everybody. Which, if you use only that definition, I would be surprised if you could get anybody that would say, oh, no, 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 it is not integral to everybody's day as they're browsing their phone and, you know, listening to the radio on their iPad. So, but there's a lot of other mitigating circumstances. And of course, the people that are fighting it are, no big surprise, the telecommunications giants, AT&T, Verizon, CenturyLink, Comcast, yep. You name it. Those are the companies that are like, no, no, you can't do that. So it will be interesting, and we will know today.
Yeah, and what's most likely to happen, this thing's going to end up in Supreme Court. And
you
it's
think
gonna,
so?
I think it's going to end up getting kicked up there anyway, no matter what the decision is.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think if it goes against the open internet, then I think it probably will. But I think if it doesn't, you know, a little background on that. The FCC has tried to regulate internet two times before in the same court. This is their third try with a third tactic. A lot of the experts say that this time it seems like they have a stronger argument than they had before. So I watch the news and listen to the news. It will surely touch on this. And if you don't think it affects you, you're wrong.
Another new part of this is they're going to consider whether mobile internet and cable internet should be regulated in the same way. And, of course, we may not, at the 30,000 foot level, we may not see a whole big difference here, but the, of course, internet companies think this is a long overdue question. they argue that the FCC, you know, didn't follow the proper procedure to adopt the rules that they did in the first place. But then those rules also threaten growth and innovation and other things. So it's going to be fairly interesting. It's the open internet part of it. It seems to be everybody's playing along so far. The major gauge on people's dashboard is that whether or not their Netflix streams okay, and it seems like Netflix has signed agreements with other companies to make that all go smoothly. Amos, did you have something you want to throw?
Well, coincidentally, Sandra from Vermillion sent us a message on Facebook, Tech Radio, mm-hmm. Asking when rural South Dakota is going to have better access to internet, because right now they're using the Verizon 4G service.
Okay.
And while it works, it's expensive, and they've got a certain allotted amount of data that they can use.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking for, you know, when will internet service become ubiquitous? When can you get internet as freely as you can get a landline or you can get water service? You know, that's kind of the question. And really, that's what they're debating about today, right? Is whether or not it should be regulated, whether or not it should be available to everybody, whether or not it should be accessible in even rural communities?
That's a part of it. I mean, the fear of some of the companies is that the government is going to step in and at some point start dictating prices. You know, the FCC has said it's going to do that. It's going to forbear that part of the Title II part of this, that they're not going to do that. But it's a fear.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that seems a little overblown. You know, that is not exactly what happened with common carrier for both railroad and telephone. Mostly it was just put that, you know, you had to offer access to people that couldn't afford it. There had to be a ceiling on the price for this, that, and the other thing. You know, different recourse for if it fails, and more protection for the consumer. So it's more complicated than, you know, the government saying, all right, you have to offer it for $10, you know.
And, I mean, and really what it comes down to in the rural areas is the cost of the infrastructure build-out, right? I mean, because if you're going to go out there and you're going to put fiber in the ground and you're going to employ these third-party contractors to do all this work to build that up, those companies have to have some way to recoup that cost. And a $40 a month bill for the 12 people who live in that area, it's going to take a long time for any infrastructure to be repaid. Now, as opposed to building it to a Vermilion or to a Sioux Falls where you've got a much larger base, it really comes down to economics in those areas.
She must be rural in Vermilion because there's several options in Vermilion as far as DSL.
She says she's
cable.
Several miles north.
Okay, and north is an issue as well. There's a internet provider to the south, more in the Sioux City area, that some people along the bluff of Vermilion and south of Vermilion can hit. What's the technology? It isn't microwave technology, but there's a little antenna that you point. I don't know exactly what that technology is.
Point-to-point wireless.
Some people on fringes of Vermilion can get that. Others cannot. So I guess everybody can get satellite, right? But that's cost prohibitive.
Yeah, and it's also not particularly fast. The one advantage of point-to-point wireless is, of course, it's finicky, but it works exactly the way that Wi-Fi does, essentially works that way. But instead of broadcasting over an area, it focuses, it takes a kind of a wider slice of that frequency, and it focuses it in the same way kind of a parabolic microphone might, focuses it in a direction, and then you just kind of latch onto that in the exact same way, really, that satellite TV works. You know, you've got a satellite throwing down, video, not video, obviously, but data and signal to a receiver that's on your house. Point-to-point wireless works exactly the same way and can actually be as fast as just about anything out there if you take a large slice of several different frequencies and focus it in that area. The problem is it's very problematic and it's costly because you have to focus. You can't send one stream and pick up three or four other people. It has to be more finicky than that. So
Sioux Valley Wireless still does that service or the kind of a WiMAX kind of a thing still up in this area, don't they?
As far as I know, I haven't heard. Yeah. I haven't heard
so
that.
So there are, I guess, providers and little spotty providers for
Sandra replied too, saying that North Dakota's got fiber optics all throughout North Dakota, and that's true. And my response to that, having had experience in the telecom industry with my last job, that there have been, and even in South Dakota, there have been federal grants that have been given to extend and to pay for that infrastructure to get into those rural areas where it just doesn't make economic sense for the carrier to do it themselves. And so there are a lot of places in South Dakota that would not have fast, high-speed internet access had those grants not happened. That being the case, it's not everywhere, right? It's not in each and every tiny community. And I'm sure there's some places in North Dakota that have that same problem too. And it's just really a matter of time before that would happen. Those grants come up on occasion, and believe me, the telecoms use them. Because it both expands their base, expands their ability to service customers and charge those prices while at the same time reducing their costs of the actual price to get into that business, and also allows them a great advertising product to say, hey, we've got 3,800 miles or we've got 10,000 miles of fiber in the ground. So,
at the local level, I guess, I mean South Dakota, who is the overseer of that? Is that the Public Utilities Commission?
That'd be a good question for Jeff.
Yeah. Jeff, would that be the PUC that we could we're not going to get to it on today's show, and I don't know the answer. Maybe you do, but is there a governmental agency? Is it BIT or is it the PUC that may have that sort of roadmap as to what coverage is available where and where we're going next?
Yes, actually BIT with the broadband projects. And their website has a map of the different providers. That project was federally funded and has ended now, but the maps are still variable and still pretty accurate. The coverage has only gotten better between the different vendors since. The PUC does do some stuff, but they don't get a lot of it because a lot of the internet stuff is not regulated. So Well, they are a telecommunications regulatory body. They only work with telecommunications companies that also have other services. And many ISPs in the state, like the Sioux Valley Wireless, are not under them because they don't offer, you know, telecommunications services also. It's kind of interesting. A lot of rural areas have started getting fiber. I know my relatives in Minor County, their farmhouse has fiber. There were a whole series of grants a couple of years ago. And if your telephone company participated in them, you probably have better access. But if you didn't, it is very expensive to get rural access. It's very expensive to put fiber in the ground. If that's one of your, and in fact, anymore, if that's one of your qualifications, I say you should probably check before you move or buy a house, what are your internet options in that area, in on that exact block, because they can change from block to block. So, yeah, it's a pain point, but it's part of the rural life at this point.
You know, I mean, the unfortunate part is, and this takes collaboration with commerce and government, but, you know, United States has easily, for our size, like the worst internet access. If you're in Seoul, Korea, you can get 1,000 megabytes, you know, which is not even possible in this country, for about $30 a month. To pay for 500, you know, and by the way, most of you out there are probably getting less than 10 when I'm saying these numbers. To pay for 500, and you can only get it in Washington, D.C., and New York, and some other place, that costs you $300 a month. So, and then you could pick your other places all over Europe, even in the U.K., 10 megabits is basically free anywhere you go. You can get 50 megabits service for about $10 a month. So, you know, the United States needs to really get serious about internet, and it's going to take government and private companies to do that.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to talk about a little bit of gifting for this year. And we've got a question for the iPad Pro from you from Twitter. So we'll get to that right after this. And welcome back to Tech Radio for this fine December day. I want to remind you how to get a hold of us here. Facebook.com/techradio is the place to go there. You can tweet us at SDPB. Our phone number is 800-524-3604. And, of course, the more popular way most days is midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at SDPB.org, that email address. Just pop us off an email. Don't be shy. Again, our phone number, 800-524-3604. Joel from Twitter, Larry is asking about composing written work on the iPad Pro. I'm assuming he's talking about typing out a blog piece or doing something like that. You mentioned you didn't buy the keyboard.
I don't own the Apple keyboard. And one thing I'll say about that is, the iPad Pro has a special connector on the on what would be the bottom if you're using it in a kind of laptop.
Three little dots there
that basically hooks it up to that keyboard. That's the only thing it's for. So you don't have to worry about, you know, maybe the lag that Bluetooth might have or having to sync it or it going out of sync. So while I have typed on that keyboard, I've used it. And I think it's very good. It's as good as some of the Bluetooth keyboards that I've used, maybe better than some. You know, because there's no mouse, I would say probably if you do a lot of typing, especially on a laptop type device, I wouldn't recommend this necessarily unless you really like the portability over a laptop. I'd probably still go with a laptop in that, you know, I'm doing this on Amos's laptop. You can adjust the angle to be just right depending on the where you are. You might be, you know, actually putting it on your lap and that changes the angle. Anytime you do that with a tablet, whether it's Microsoft's or Apple's or any other, you know, you don't get that freedom of moving it to just the right angle you want. You know, you might be, you know, with your legs up and you might have it almost, you know, at 160 degrees. So you don't have that flexibility. Plus you don't have a mouse, although you can touch it. There are some advantages there. I think if you're doing a lot of typing, I think you probably still want a laptop or a desktop.
How's voice recognition on that?
It's as good as any of the iOS devices.
And could you, could
the
I?
The speakers are amazing, by the way. We
could I put a Bluetooth headset in with a mic and talk to that and speak my blog post?
I suppose so. I can't imagine any writer doing that, but.
I'm not just any writer.
That's right. In the future, I suppose that will happen. But I would imagine that would change how you would write. But I don't imagine that fits within the scope of question he asked.
Yeah. Well,
try it out. But I wouldn't. I doubt it.
Okay.
Not being a writer myself, I can't say that for sure.
Okay. And I just wanted a quick loop back to our last discussion. Quick, Jeff. Is that broadband? .sd.gov, is that where that map is that you were talking about? He's we're going to look it up, and I'll bet we're going to paste it on our Facebook page as well. But I believe it's
it's the broadband.sd.gov. The map's not on that exact page, but you can surf. And there's actually a lot of good stuff about getting broadband in different areas of South Dakota, different articles, and different facts and guidelines besides just the map. So, but the mapping's still there, and it's a little bit out of date now. I'll say it's probably about a year now out of date, but it's just still going to be really, really close. In fact, like I said, if anything, it's probably better coverage than it was back then.
Great. Well, I got you on the online here. There was a hack that was discovered. Not necessarily by the company that got hacked, but with VTech. And if parents have kids, they probably are familiar with that brand because it's in a lot of stores and it may be a child's first introduction to technology. And there's an aspect of that, an online aspect of that, I think the Lodge, they call it, that actually has kids' names and passwords and reset questions and other things that somebody got access to that database without the knowledge of the company. Has that been all patched now, Jeff? Do you know?
Well, somewhat, yeah. It's actually one of the bigger hacks of this last year, and which is kind of amazing considering the other data breaches we've had this past year. It is actually considered one of the bigger ones because there are millions of children's names and information was stored in those. And this morning, just to kind of show you how even toys can be hacked, there was an article that the new Barbie that's controlled over the Internet is very hackable too. It has a three-year-old exploit, actually. It's vulnerable to you. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting because at the end of this year, we talked about the data breaches of adults and credit cards and the dating websites that have been hacked and stuff. And now at the end of the year, it's all about hacking toys and these other, you know, children websites and information gathering. Not that, you know, it's probably as financial benefit to the hackers as the other sites, but it shows that no one is immune to this and that if they can get in and get your data, they will.
Interesting. One bright spot, I guess, on this hack is that it doesn't appear to have been necessarily malicious. It was reported to a Canadian reporter who contacted the company. They discovered that they had the issue, but it doesn't look like the guy was just basically wanting to let people know that vulnerability was there. There doesn't appear to be that somebody has actually got it and used the information for anything yet.
So. Right. So, it's kind of an eye shocker to a lot of people that people are collecting so much data. In fact, Google made a promise to the European Union not to track children, and the EU is actually suing them right now for saying Google is still tracking children and keeping data on minors and their surfing habits and stuff like that. So, you know, data in the cloud is data in the cloud, and it is all vulnerable, and, you know, everyone's being tracked. And I don't think a lot of the VTech users were probably aware of how much data they were actually collecting and storing.
Hmm. Well, speaking of cloud, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that's probably the biggest eye-opener about this one is even your children's information is very valuable. money-wise for certain people, and that they're being tracked and their data is being collected.
Yeah. I was going to mention again, you mentioned cloud, and Microsoft Office 365 had a kind of a widespread outage the other day, and I don't think that's a common thing. But I guess the question I had for today's show was, what are we supposed to do if we, as a general habit, keep everything in the cloud, and then all of a sudden that access isn't there anymore? What's the best practice on that, Jeff? Are we supposed to keep a local copy and a cloud copy, or how's that work?
Well, it kind of depends on how serious and how much you need your access in real time. And Gmails have had problems too. Google's gone down, sort of Google services have gone down in the past. 365 has gone down in the past before. Any Salesforce, which is another big enterprise business cloud service provider, has gone down. Anybody can go down that's on the internet. And you know, it's up to you and what you need your data for to create the right policies. If you must have real-time access and it's, you know, life critical, you need to keep local copies of the data. If it's, well, I can live without Gmail, you know, for 3-4 hours, understanding that they will fix it. That's another thing. You just keep backup copies just in case, you know, something really bad happened and the data got destroyed. Maybe use two different cloud providers and backup between them so that in most cases, you're only going to lose access to one and not both. But it is going to be a real concern, and more concern is more critical applications kind of get put in the cloud. There, you know, you're going to hear about cloud redundancy and maybe using multiple cloud providers to serve up applications.
Have you ever considered creating your own cloud?
Well, you know, it's kind of one of those things. What is a real cloud? A cloud is a server, right, that you're offering services on someplace remotely. I've actually had cloud stuff in my home network a few years ago, but I turned those Linux servers off because I was kind of doing my own DNS and my own email server and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of, you know, moved everything to other providers because it just made more sense than me taking my time to maintain it. So, you know, anyone can offer a cloud, and that's one of the things you have to be aware of, because all the cloud really is a bunch of servers someplace remote to you. You do want to vet your vendors to make sure they're just, you know, they kind of know what they're doing and are protecting your data and having reliability to prevent outages as much as possible. But it's still, you know, just internet accessible services.
Yeah, I just happened to see an article this week from a company, I think it's the open source main open source website that lists the different competing, I don't want to use the word competing, but the alternate versions of using the cloud services. You can kind of create those on your own and make your own sort of private version. And I thought maybe that was a little bit too nerdy for the show or to really get into a giant segment on, but there may be some listeners of the show that may be interested and go, I didn't know you could do that. But I think it's opensource.org.
Don't do that with the expectation of better reliability than your existing cloud providers, because I guarantee you it's not going to be.
There's people working behind the scenes in all those different places.
Right. Only do it if that's your hobby.
Right. Do that for fun, not for...
kind of a nerdy kind of a thing.
And, it is fun.
Absolutely nerdy.
Yeah.
And fun.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Fun. You got a new toy this week, Amos?
I did. Real quickly, I hear the music playing. I did. I got the Gear VR, which is the new virtual reality headset that allows you to use some particular Samsung phones in order to view video and still pictures in virtual reality with audio. And
how is that?
It's pretty incredible for a first generation kind of technology. It's not perfect, but it's definitely immersive. And for $100, it's a good idea for a Christmas present.
I'll tell you what, we got a little shorter on time today to talk about toys and stuff, but never fear, we have a show December 18th. We'll make that the first segment. We'll maybe talk about some more geek gifts at that point. Unfortunately, you hear the music. That is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our panelists today. Jeff Litterick, of course, in Pier, Amos Aesop here at KCSD, and Joel Brovelite, thank you so much for your time today. Everybody have a great weekend, and go to sdpb.org and check things out there for the information on the show.